I know when I'm working with students and undergraduates, it's always about trying to embed these flexible ideas of communication from the outset. So not being rigid, not thinking that there's one formula or recipe, being prepared to let the patient take the lead, let the patient take the control.
We're understanding how important quality communication is in what we do as health professionals. But how do we actually do that? Today we had Mike Stewart on, who is a physiotherapist, a researcher, a university lecturer with 20 years experience, and his degree was in education and physiotherapy. He loves communication, and the topic he brought up today is why do hairdressers communicate better than health professionals? Mike has also done a Physio Network masterclass, which you can dive deeper into and check the link in the show notes for a 7-day free trial. This was a really practical episode, knowing not just what to say, when to say it, but how to say it. Please enjoy this episode. My name is Michael Risk, and this is Physio Explained. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, Michael. Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You've done a wonderful masterclass for Physio Network on communication. We're going to link that up in the show notes. But we wanted to cover some topics. And in the email you sent to me before the episode, you spoke to an experience where hairdressers have better communications than healthcare professionals. Could you dig a little deeper into that for us?
Yeah, certainly. This was an interesting comment from a patient a good while ago now, where she was really quite annoyed. She came into physio and she hadn't had good experiences in healthcare. And she said, "My hairdresser makes a better communicator than you lot." So, of course, the question to ask is, well, why? And she said, "Well, when I go to see my hairdresser, they don't start by saying, 'How's your hair been since we last met?' You know, like when we come to physio, it's 'How's your shoulder been? How's your neck been?'" I think it speaks to something really crucial and fundamental, which is often when we're communicating in healthcare, we're not seeing the person. The evidence shows that we spend 99% of our time learning about anatomy and biomechanics and pathology, which of course are important. But because we spend such a little amount of time learning about communication skills and guiding skills, coaching skills, facilitational skills, we lose sight of some of the what we would term basic soft skills, which can be quite hard sometimes. So I think we have to learn from other professions, and hairdressers make great communicators, and maybe we can pick up on a few of their skills.
What do you think they are? What do you think they do specifically, or at least this patient was referencing?
Well, I think it's interesting because there are some similarities between our profession and hairdressers. We touch people. We know here in the United Kingdom, there's been studies for some time now teaching hairdressers how to use cognitive behavioral therapy skills. Because, of course, hairdressers and barbers will often say, as soon as I touch people's heads or hair, they open up, they start communicating, they start telling me all sorts of things. So I think there are some similarities. There's a problem, though. I think our training leads us to communicate less well. I always try to get this across to students. If pain is a distressing human experience, which it often is, maybe distress is a better word than pain. If your friend was distressed, you would go to a cafe together. There would be loads of eye contact and you would sit and talk like, you know, you'd say, "Bloody hell, that sounds terrible. I'm really sorry to hear this. How can I help? How have you been coping with this?" That's how a human being would talk. And I'm sure lots of people who are listening now, that's how you'd communicate with your friend or your loved one. But once we've been through physio school teaches us to not communicate like this. When we're with patients, we communicate a bit more robotically. So straight away, we don't involve eye contact. We're looking down at a piece of paper or a laptop screen, perhaps. We're more focused on the documentation. One of my patients once said to me, "Oh, thank God you're not using tick boxology." And instead of communicating like a human dealing with somebody else in distress, we would say, "Well, I'm really sorry to hear that your wife has left you for the gym instructor. How would that make you feel on a scale of 0 to 10? And of course, your mate would be going, "This is really bad. You know, this is not human behavior. This is not natural." So it's all about setting the mood right. And I think whenever I've gone and watched people like Laura Mosley in practice, or you go and watch Jeremy Lewis and Peter O'Sullivan, there's always a sort of common theme here, which is it's relaxed and it's informal. It's like cafe style conversations. And I think that's the important thing to grasp. And maybe a practical tip here, if we want to be a little bit more like the hairdresser and a bit more human in our conversation, then yes, of course, it's important that we document. But it's really crucial that we have eye contact and that we make a physical human interaction as personable as possible. So maybe try saying to the patient, look, we've got to fill out some paperwork. We've got to document this. But how about we just have a conversation? How about we just have a chat? And then towards the end of this consultation today, we'll both fill out the paperwork together, which then gives you an opportunity together to check and clarify and see if there's any gaps in your understanding. You might say, well, you work in an office and you've got three kids. They'll say, no, I work in a school and I don't have any kids. Well, and then you're thinking, oh, God. So I think we need to consider trying to become a bit more human and a bit more friendly and a bit less tick boxology physio robot in how we communicate. It's not a finger pointing exercise. It's not saying that this is really bad. It's a training issue. And that's the key thing. We don't learn to communicate and educate.
How do we do that as new grads? Because what I've experienced with new grads is there is some comfort in structure. There is some comfort in the tick boxology that you said. I'm trying to learn to guide my new grads as a mentor with, that's what you've learned, and there's some comfort and security and structure in that versus the looseness of the conversation. Would you have any things you could dig into there for a new grad?
Very much so. I think it's about starting from the beginning. I know when I'm working with students and undergraduates, it's always about trying to embed these flexible ideas of communication from the outset. So not being rigid, not thinking that there's one formula or recipe, being prepared to let the patient take the lead, let the patient take the control. There are three rules. I think healthcare communication becomes so much more effective and so much easier for us if we follow these three rules, which is listen. If you listen, if you start the conversation, regardless of how much experience you've had in physiotherapy, start the conversation by listening, by asking a question. You know, how can they help? Tell me what's been going on. And then purposefully zip it. Don't talk for at least 2 minutes. Allow the person to get out what's pertinent to them, what's going on in their life. So listen. Then only by listening can you do the second thing, which is find out what they need. If you listen, you can then find out what it is that's going on. So if we've listened for those at least couple of minutes, we can then start to interact and say, well, it sounds like you're saying this. It sounds like these are the problems you're having. Is that right? And then we can then do the third thing, which is to signpost. We direct and signpost people towards things that they need. So act like a signposter rather than as somebody who's telling people what to do. So I think you're right, Michael. We have comfort in structure. So maybe the structure should be based around those three rules, rather than saying, if I think back to when I first qualified, it was very Maitland orientated in the 90s. And I used to have a script. You know, I can still go through that script in my head now. Good morning, I'm Mike Stewart. I'm your physio today. This is what we're going to do. And I sort of cringe at that thinking back, because it was all about me. I had control at all points. So maybe think about those three things. Listen, find out what they need, signpost them. It's a really simple formula, if there is to be a formula, which I think sometimes there isn't. It's a bit more complex than that.
They're beautiful tips. And I wonder if there is some comfort in that, because I remember being a new grad thinking, I'll never be as good as my boss, or I'll never be able to gain that 15 years experience. But it's one thing that every human can do, no matter how many years you've been a healthcare professional. Those three skills are achievable day one. I like that. I feel like there's comfort in that. So yeah, thank you for those tips.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I've had students before who they've got very little or no experience in healthcare, but they have such great natural communication skills. And it's really sad, because you see them go through their careers and I'll sort of meet them again 5-10 years later. And those natural communication skills have almost been drilled out of them by their seniors, you know, where they've taught them, though, you have to go through this very structured, very regimented routine of questions. It's such a shame, really, because we sort of kill those natural skills. I think it's important to enhance them and recognize the importance of them. It's why we come into the job. We come into the job to try and help people.
Want to take your physio skills to the next level? Look no further than our masterclass video lectures from world-leading experts. With over 100 hours of video content and a new class added every month, Masterclass is the fastest way to build your clinical skills, provide better patient care, and tick off your CPD or CEUs. Click the link in the show notes to try Physio Network's masterclasses for free today.
Great point. And it might lead into the second idea that we spoke about off air was to empower our patients, we probably have to surrender some of our power. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. You know, I had a really interesting experience around this. I always ask clinicians, what is it you're trying to achieve? What do you want to do with patients? And always it comes back as empowerment. You know, I've gone and taught in 18 different countries, and wherever I go and teach around the world, clinicians always say, I want to empower my patients. I want to get better at empowerment. But I think empowerment begins with an understanding that we have to be prepared to lose our power, that our power goes down in order for the patient's power to rise and come up. And again, if we're thinking about how can we learn from other professions, which professions are really great at empowerment? Well, you know, driving instructors are fantastic at this. Let me ask you a few questions. This is how I do this with patients, Michael. So I'll do it in the same way that we do it with you. Do you drive, Michael?
Yes.
When did you learn how to drive? How long ago?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. And approximately how many lessons did you have when you were learning how to drive?
So no, but I remember it was a 150-hour logbook.
All right. So a fair few hours, fair few lessons. So here's my final question. So 20 years you've been driving, 150 hours of learning and requiring the driving instructor, needing the driving instructor. How many times have you seen the driving instructor since you passed your test?
Never.
Never. Yeah. Why is that? That's weird. What's that about? Why don't you need the driving instructor anymore?
I guess you feel like once you've learned that skill, then you've got it.
Exactly. And I think that physios need to think a bit more like a driving instructor. So I'm always a firm believer in helping patients to become more like a learner driver, where they're taking control of the steering wheel and they're doing the work. And we become a little bit more like sort of the passengers, where the driving instructor in the passenger seat. I encounter lots of patients, I'm sure your listeners do, who they're being chauffeured around. You know, they've had years of physiotherapy. And within this metaphor, they're in the back seat. They're coming in for their treatment. They're getting passive care all the time. Somebody else is driving the care. So I always use this idea, these three questions with patients. You know, when did you learn to drive? How many lessons did you have? Do you still need the driving instructor? Because what it does is starts to plant a seed. It starts to get patients to think about, okay, have I been having 30 or 20 years of physiotherapy? And do I need to start to look at how do I take control? Do I want to take control? What do we do when patients don't want to take the steering wheel? So empowerment really begins with that idea of getting your patients to work harder. I've done a few conference talks and the title has been, would you like to learn how to work less hard? Because fundamentally, I've been doing some research surrounding burnout in healthcare. We know burnout is on the rise. You know, healthcare professionals are more than three times likely to burn out than other professionals, particularly since the COVID pandemic. And part of that is we're working too hard. And it's because we're not allowing our patients to work hard enough, perhaps. We're doing all the driving instructing from the driving seat. So perhaps we need to get a little bit better at enabling our patients to work harder, which means we work easier. We don't work as much. We guide them rather than tell them.
It's a really nice reflection. And I think if I have a day with 10 or 14 patients and I'm trying to come up with 10 or 14 solutions, that is draining. Whereas I think what I was learning towards the end of my consulting time was these conversations don't feel like I have to come up with 14 solutions for 14 different humans. And that actually had me ending the days fresher, but I feel like it was a better outcome for the patient and the therapist. So I really like that you highlighted that.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
A good practical example of this, I often joke that we were all learning for years in university how to teach somebody to stand up from a chair. You know, we spend years, I have a degree in how to get someone to stand from a chair. And of course, if you stop and get your patient to create their own exercises, I'll often say to people, you can measure how creative somebody is in 60 seconds. There's a Guilford, an American psychologist, created a test called Guilford's Alternative Uses Task involving paperclip. How many things can you think of to use a paperclip for in 60 seconds? We can do the same thing with a chair, a wall, a floor. So I don't teach patients exercises anymore because we know, we explore the evidence, patients don't do the exercises we tell them to do because, of course, they don't have ownership over it. We own the exercises. So I always say to people, look, you have a gym at home. You've got a chair, you've got a wall, you've got a floor, you know, you've got a table. There's a dining chair. here's 60 seconds on the clock. Let's have some fun. Can you create as many exercises as you can think of using that chair? And that's us losing our control. That's us giving the control to the patients and saying, well, okay. And suddenly you'll find these patients, they create their own exercise, like a sit to stand or walking around in a circle around the chair, picking the chair up, doing tricep dips or whatever it is. So they come up with these things. And I think the most important thing, if we're going to do that type of work with patients, is realize they have to have the ownership. They have to have the control. And everything that they do has to have meaning. It's got to be related to what's important to them. If they do a sit to stand from a chair, that's great. How is it going to help you go back to work or play with your kids? So the three rules of exercise prescription from that point of view, meaning, meaning, meaning. Does it have meaning to them? You know, how does this relate to their life?
I love that, Mike. And there was something that I've been seeing swirling around socials, and it's how to end a consult and particularly rebooking and how much you might help someone and how you have that conversation in a patient-centered way. Do you have any thoughts, tips, or ideas or metaphors you use for that part of the consult when we're trying to communicate in this manner?
Yeah, it's a really important point. I think sometimes the hardest thing to do is to work out, you know, well, how are we going to end this relationship? When is the patient able and capable and feels liberated enough to go it alone? Come back to the driving instructor again. When are they able to do it without the driving instructor? So maybe that's important, is to test their understanding. My master's degree was in education. And one of the things I learned is that when you're teaching somebody something, you have to assess their learning. You go through the learning process. And then at the end, of course, you'll sit there and have a test or an exam. We don't want to sit and do a test or an exam with our patients, but we need to give them the ability to show that they've got it. You know, that's it. Now you've got it. Now you can do it. So ask them before they leave, can you run me through that back in your own words? Can you show me what it is you've been doing? Can you teach somebody else how to do this? You know, Einstein once said that you only fully understand something when you can teach your granny the thing that you've learned. So I love it when patients come in and they say, oh, you know, I've been talking to my colleague in work about what you've been saying, and I've been trying to help her with her back pain. Fantastic. Great. So I think the important thing is to test, do they feel confident? Do they feel like they've got that self-efficacy, that resilience?
Yeah. Mike, we've very quickly run out of time, but there's been so much gold in this episode, and I think some really good breakthroughs for inexperienced and clinicians alike. So thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the masterclass as well.
Absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and it's always a pleasure to hear that people have been finding the masterclass helpful. So thank you very much for that.